Mr. Charlie Chia Fu Ying, Rue 12.
So during the stay in Brunei town, it was quite an interesting experience where I learned to live off the land the best as I could in the circumstances. My cook, Indian cook, fortunately also was quite smart in a sense. Because there were no shops in town. And the only thing available was this boiled eggs sold by an old Chinese woman, you see. And maybe off and on a bit of veg. But this Indian cook of mine did manage to get hold of belacan. And that belacan, I recollect, remained my main staple dish most of the time. We just rice, insofar as rice, and for myself and cook concerned, we had sufficient for ourselves, you see. But it was only, there was nothing to go down with it other than the belacan. So what he did was cook it with a bit of water, and then we took it with our rice, you see. And maybe off and on, there were some Javanese laborers roaming around the town, you see. And of course, they were also looking for pickings, what we would call pickings, you see. So some of them went down to the wharfs site. You had some toilets built on stilts outside. So these Javanese laborers used to wait around there. They catch this fish, small size, what we call this ikan bodukang. They wait around these toilets, you see, and the human waste is their food. So off and on, I do meet up with these chappies with their catch, you see. So I used to buy it off them. And the cook just clean it up, and we ate it with no thought whether it was clean or dirty. There was no such ethics when answering nature's call for food. Of course, they try off and on, but without success, you see. To try and buy with the Japanese currency. But other than the eggs, the money wasn't worth. What they wanted was clothing or shoes or cloth. If you had this, you could exchange. But I had none. I had more or less, I'd gone down to more or less this shirt, and another one or two in the pants that I was wearing, you see. So I had nothing to bargain. Oh, that's how we manage. And during all that time, we only had one real good feed. That was a day, I don't know, yeah, it was the military people who supplied us with a big turtle. Oh, we had a grand feast that couple of days, you see. Of course, lovely. I think that is about the only meat I tasted.
In general, how would you compare the working and living conditions in Brunei as that in Singapore when you were here?
Well, when I was working in Singapore with the United Engineers, there I got on well, I would say well, with the Japanese soldiers in charge, and I had no trouble, you see. You still had the shops selling things. So time did fly. It was not very noticeable, you see. Whereas out in Brunei, there's practically nobody in town. Other than that laundry shop, and even the restaurant, after a short while it closed. The only one we saw, the only one of the opposite sex we saw in Brunei town was the laundry's daughter. Well, quite pretty. Well, she gave us some inspiration, at least, you see. And after the day's work, when we came back, used to wash up and under, try and have a glimpse of her, you see. But of course, the laundry packed up shop and went back. You see, all the shops, they had houses inland, you see. Oh, they all packed up and went home for the night. So what remained open was the gambling den, you see. So it was like that. You were left all alone on your own for the night. Because there was no purpose in going out. There was nothing. Well, my recollection of Brunei is it consists of two rows shop houses, and then maybe another two rows of shop houses on the waterfront, and then the military barracks, then the the other houses were all about half mile away from the town. So there was nothing actually. So life went on like that. Of course, as time went on, we had more and more sick people. And things got pretty rough, because insofar as the workmen are concerned, we had to ration out the rice which I drew every month, and all that they lived on was that this Japanese seaweed. And, there's no salt. So you can see where food was concerned, it was very tough for these people, you know.
Were there any casualties?
Oh yes, there were casualties, you know. No, after a few months, casualties started. In the morning, we went down to, went next door to look at the bunks. Yep. Then I found the cops. Now all that I could do was to bring him out, put him on a 5-foot way for the time being, and wait until I can get old, catch hold of two Javanese laborers. Ask them to go and get these kajang leaves and tie the body up, wrap it up. And then I brought along a charcoal. And these two Japanese laborers helped me to carry the body. I went outside the town about a quarter mile away or so. Then at the nearest place, I got these Japanese to dig a hole. Of course, inside there, mosquito infested. Could hear them, see them buzzing around, you know. And, I could not afford to dig deep, you see. So the most, I went down is about 2 feet. Just enough to slide the corpse in. After that, I just said a short prayer over it and got the laborers to fill it up, cover it over. I came back, paid these laborers a couple of dollars each. That's all, you see.
Throughout your stay there, were there many, how many casualties were there?
Well, there were 10 over sick workmen. At our peak period, we had 10 over sick workmen. And at least 7-8 of them died. 7-8 of them died.
How long did you stay there?
I stayed in Brunei until the arrival of the Allied forces. The first Allied forces to land were these Australians.
Do you remember when was that?
Yeah. You see, sometime I think before the Chinese New Year or so, the workmen, all the workmen and the Japanese were evacuated from Morotai down to Brunei en route to Miri, because the Japanese chief must have heard some news, you see, because he was the one who's in touch with the military headquarters. And he had made preparations to establish in Miri. So the Morotai people, they were all evacuated down to Brunei. It was around the Chinese New Year 1945. I remember it that day, because on that day I did make a successful attempt to obtain a chicken for our New Year dinner, you see, because I and another Chinese supposed to be supervisor, we went right inside, you see, more or less begging our way all the way. see if we could buy a chicken. Eventually we were rewarded. We managed to buy a small chicken. So only a few days they all remained in Brunei town. After which they were all transported by Japanese military lorries en route to Miri. So I was left behind in Miri together to look after the sick people, to do whatever I can, and together with the Songhe people. So it was a few months, there was no news from the Japanese chief. So the sawmill Indian workmen, they were rather desperate. They said, "What is this? No pay. So many months. I too had no pay." Really? So I said, "Well, what to do?" So I decided, I would take the journey to Miri myself. So I went down to the military headquarters there. I knew they had transport. So I made arrangements with them. I got a lift. Even before then, even before I went down to Miri, the air raids had already started. You see, I remember one morning, the Japanese, brick making Japanese, he came over in the late evening after dinner, and he slept the night together with me on the bunk in the rear room. And the next morning we got up, we heard this aeroplane noises, we looked out, and then we saw these planes, and next minute this machine gun burst came through the wooden panel at the rear, but it went above our heads, we quickly scrambled downstairs. Those days, the Japanese military, they got wise to these raids. So what they did was, they got up early in the morning, they cooked, they had their breakfast, then they marched out into the jungle, you see. They marched inside for a few miles. So after that incident, I too was wary. At first I stayed down around town. So whenever these planes came, I just stood behind the concrete pillars, you see. I said, "I don't think they can penetrate. Quite safe. Unless I get a direct hit on my head." And therein I seen, frightened, They came, they machine gunned the town. I said, "You could see the bullets, about the size of your palm, I said, "My God, if one of these went through my body, I don't know what would happen." You see? And they dropped a few bombs. They tried to bomb out the houses. They couldn't succeed. So what they did was, those 44 gallon drums, you see, they just let it go over the shop houses.
From the Allied planes.
From the Allied planes, you see. We call them the Merry Widows. And not far away from our shop house, they built the air raid shelter. I had a look at the air raid shelter. Thank goodness, you never find me inside there. It was top heavy. No proper foundation. It was top heavy. I say, you need not get a direct hit on that shelter and you had it. You see, close by enough, it will shake. And there you get a cave in, you see. So I never went. So when I got weary of this blooming air raids, I also followed the Japanese style. In the morning, get up, go inside the jungle, spend the whole day in the jungle there, you see. And came back in the evening. But after that, all the shops closed. Even those remaining shops reclosed. So my cook also, he ran away. He went to join those the sawmill laborers, workmen. So I got nobody. So I decided to go to Miri on my own. So I went down to Miri. I had to lift from this on the Japanese military lorry down to as far as Kuala Belait. And after that, I foxtrot my way. I had a vague idea of the route to be taken. So I reached the outside of Miri and inquired from these Japanese. I still remember the name of the firm, so I asked them, where's this company? So they told me, oh, it's up in the hills there. So I went. Somehow or other, I managed to find them, you see, find the Japanese chief. The accountant was very happy to see me, you see. So I spent 2 nights there. Of course, I met this other Indian named Nathan there. After 2 nights there, early next morning, the accountant, overnight, he gave me cash to pay the sawmill people as well as myself. And he told me, he says, bring whatever workmen you can down to Miri. You see? And early in the morning, he accompanied me down to Miri, to the town fringe there, and he waved me goodbye. He says, try, bring whatever workmen you can down to Miri. You see, we'll be still here. I said, all right. So I foxtrot my way back. I remember doing a stretch, walking on the beach from early morning through the whole night until early morning, where I landed outside Kuala Belait again. I was totally exhausted. I just slept under the nearest tree. I woke up in the afternoon then I went. Fortunately, I managed to scrounge a meal from some Indians there. So in the afternoon, I went down. After that, I went down, had a look around the town. The town again was deserted, with the exception of this gambling den, which had quite a number of people there. I also heard there was another Eurasian Singaporean staying short distance away from the town. So that night I slept in the town. Early next morning, I got up, I took a walk inside. Then I managed to find this Singapore chap's house, you see. He had brought his wife and two children, I think it was, along, you see. And they stayed in a wooden house. We were just beginning to talk when, looking out of the window, I saw these merry widows again. Knowing what it would be about, I quickly ran out of the house, and outside the house, there was this the framework of this lorry chassis. Only the iron framework left. I dived down beside it, and these planes came overhead, the machine gun again. I could see the sparks fly again. It was really frightening, you see. The Eurasian chap and his family, they jumped down into the well. Okay? So when the first wave passed, I didn't know there was a well. But they knew there was a well close by, you see, so they jumped into the well. I saw them jump in. When the first wave passed by, I quickly followed suit. I also jumped into the well, you see. And after the thing was over, I say, oh, well, I've had it, I better get back to Brunei. And across to the island where that Chinese family was staying. So again, I managed to get the lift back in the Japanese military lorry. We were nearing Brunei when there was another air raid again. The driver stopped, and besides the road, there was a pond. So we all jumped into the pond, Japanese soldiers and myself, we all jumped into the pond again. It didn't bomb. So after it left, we went back to the truck. The driver drove us to Brunei, back to Brunei. And therein,